Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island Beer Company, which brews beers that are highly rated by beer critics and beer lovers alike. More at gooseisland.com. We don't need to be the only beer you drink. We just want to be the best beer you drink.
This is Sound Opinions, and Greg, from time to time, we like to do what we call a genre dissection, digging deep into a sound that people may think they know, but maybe they don't know the roots of it, or maybe people are getting exposed to it for the first time. I have long been wanting to do a show about ska, with its roots in Jamaica, what they call the first wave, an incredible, joyous, but also political music, second wave ska coming up in the punk years, third wave ska, sort of revival and explosion of popularity in the 90s. Three different stories, really, but one classic beat.
We've got just the people here to help us explain it, Jim. Two experts in ska, Chuck Wren, a longtime ska DJ and scholar and the founder of Jump Up Records, and Charlie Organier, a harmonica player who played on countless ska sessions in Jamaica in the 60s. Chuck, Charlie, welcome to Sound Opinions.
Thanks for
having
us.
Thank you very much.
Charlie, you were there from the very beginning of ska. I mean, pretty much any time you hear a harmonica on those early Jamaican recordings, I mean, it's you. Derek Morgan, Stranger Cole, Prince Buster, Bob Marley, Toots and the Maytals, Jimmy Cliff, you name it, you played with them. So, Charlie, can you define to us what makes ska ska?
The ska is that upbeat on the over the rhythm, you know, like it's one and, it's the and, you know, one and. And the drummer, actually, the drummer just plays it straight. One, two, one, two. That's basically it. So whatever the rhythm is, that upbeat over that and, that's what make it ska.
Mm-hmm.
Just that upbeat, because the songs can be any song.
Right.
You know, it could be Abide With Me, Fall Down, whatever it is.
Yeah.
But as long as that beat is there, that upbeat,
sure,
that's what ska is. And so it can be up-tempo, it can be medium-tempo.
Mm-hmm.
And the name ska, where did that originate?
Theophilus Beckford, which was a popular pianist, Cluett Johnson, Rico Rodriguez, and people like those, they started playing a song called Easy Snapping.
Last night, Papa come in town, he stood across the door. Bowman said, no, Bob, pull your real gun clown. Easy snapping. Easy snapping. Easy snapping. But baby, why you damned and shy?
And of course, most of the music that they played was of that same type of rhythm. And Cluett Johnson was a bass player. And he said, man, every day you come with a ska, ska, ska. And that's exactly where it started. The name,
uh-huh,
ska.
Meaning the guitar, ska, ska, ska.
Well, the,
ska.
The guitar and the piano and the horns.
Mm-hmm.
Because the saxophone and they all play that rhythm. The saxophone, the trumpets, and trombone, everybody playing the ska, but the lead player.
Charlie, tell us about the musical influences that went into creating ska. Now, there was Mento in the 50s, this acoustic Jamaican folk music, basically, that was the ground floor of ska music, pretty much the big precursor to ska, right?
Like you said, the Mento music is the very beginning of Jamaican music.
Everybody looking, see them all, they're searching. That's all you can hear, but no one can tell where the watch was hiding.
And of course, Jamaica, New Orleans music were very popular in Jamaica. The DJs would be playing a lot of that type of music. So we were also influenced by that.
You got early morning, don't come home till night. You got early morning, don't come home till night. Don't you know, little darling, they're bad right.
Another influence we had was Cuba. because Cuban music, Cuba is just 90 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
And
sure.
So we're listening. We played in Jamaica, we played everybody's music. Jamaican's musicians were probably the most versatile musicians. I played in the hotels also, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I played Playboy and the Holiday Inn and all these different hotels.
Mm.
And there are folks coming from the States and they want to hear something done by Frank Sinatra. So you have to know all the Frank Sinatra
right.
songs.
Yep.
You know, they want to hear a Paracomo, some want to hear a little jazz.
I'm in the mood for love, simply because you're near me. Funny, but when you're near me, I'm in the mood for love.
So you find that these musicians were versatile to all those music.
You said that the sounds of New Orleans were coming to Jamaica. How were people on Jamaica hearing American music?
Well, the thing is, the DJs, they compete against each other. So they would collect records like, you know, you have Duke Reed, which is Treasure Island. You have Sir Coxon's Downbeat. As
right.
a matter of fact, you had thousands of these sound systems all over Jamaica.
Well, and tell us what a sound system is, because this is fascinating.
The sound system is actually DJs,
mm-hmm.
but you have these huge boxes. They call them House of Joy and big powerful amps.
Yeah,
and
often on the back of a pickup truck.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, but in the dance halls, like the Jubilee, and you have Forrester's Hall, you know, and big halls like that.
Mm.
So they would put their horns up like in a tree sometimes, and you could be 5 miles away, 10 miles away, and you hear them blasted, you know.
Charlie, you were the studio harmonica player for hundreds of sessions in Jamaica. Describe for us what it was like to be in the studio recording all those classic ska singles.
We had one studio
uh-huh.
that we were working from, and it's called Federal. It was a small studio, and everything that was recorded was live. Everything was recorded live.
Wow, one take, everybody in the
same
room.
One take. You can, if you listen to the older recordings, you can hear the engineer saying red light, because when that red light comes on, that means you start.
Mm-hmm.
And always 9 o'clock in the morning, the session starts. Then from 9 to 5, then from there, another engineer starts, you know. And I was in all these sessions, so we were working from 9 o'clock till 3 a.m.
Wow.
Sometimes, yeah, and back in the studio the following day.
Would have been like New Orleans or you know, Stax or Motown, where there were house bands, and you would play on all the records by these artists. So they, one after another, they would be coming in and doing their a single, basically. Is that how it would work? You could see multiple artists in the same day?
Yeah, multiple artists, because we would do like 10 songs between 9 in the morning and 5 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Would completely record like 10 or more songs. All these sessions, the singer run down a song once.
Mm-hmm.
You memorize the rhythm, and then the next thing the guy says, red light.
Mm-hmm.
And you record just like that.
Mm-hmm.
So solos is just everything comes out naturally.
Sounds like a great gig.
Yeah, I was getting, £2 for each side I played on.
Hey, all right.
At that time, that was like couple hundred dollars today. Eventually, I mean, gradually then, Studio One, I think they were the next one open, started their own studio, and then Treasure Isle. And then after that, studios just start coming up, like, you know, out of the walls and recording studios.
Right. And back of ice cream shops. Right?
Yeah.
Turn to Chuck Wren now. Chuck, as a scholar of ska and Jamaican music, a super fan, who would you say are the most important ska artists? Or rather, I guess we should start with the Skatalites, right? It all begins there.
Skatalites were basically the house band that created the ska sound and basically enabled many, many different vocalists, such as Ken Booth or Elton Ellis, to have a career in Jamaican music. These guys built the entire foundation. You know, the house was completely constructed on top of Skatalites horn players and, you know, the vocalists they brought in and the rhythm section. They are the instrumental foundation, much in the way that people associate, you know, the house band at Motown creating the Motown sound.
One name that keeps coming up in that first wave of ska is Laurel Aitken. Some people have called him the godfather of ska.
He started with, you know, Jamaican rhythm and blues and boogie woogie and moved into ska in some ways as a later period music for him. I mean, he was definitely there at the ground floor at the, you know, late 50s, early 60s. Mm-hmm. He's got Mento recordings as well that are fantastic. And he was seamlessly able to move into ska music.
We want to be like Adam and Eve. Let us go in the garden, if you please. Put your arms around me and say that you need me only, and you'll be Eve. I'll be Adam.
Charlie Organier, you recorded with pretty much all of those artists, and you also played on the early recordings of the Jamaican artists who would become famous later on with the reggae scene in the 70s, Bob Marley, Jimmy Cliff, Toots and the Maytals. But, you know, it seems like there's so many other pioneers of that sound that are completely unknown today. Who are some of those forgotten artists who really invented ska?
When I started, we had people like Drumbago was a drummer, the saxophonist Ribs, you have one we call Campbell, always ska, the ska, and those are the horns that are playing. You know, you had different various drummers that played. Lester Sterling was from the beginning of it, you know. You have, there's so many that, and their names are not mentioned, you know, and part of it, I can't figure it out. There's like society type situation that goes with the Jamaica settings, you know. At that time, the music in Jamaica didn't get too much recognition. This music down there, like it's from the ghetto or something like that. Mm-hmm. And that's how they look at it at the time. You know, so people like Bob Marley, he gotten his recognition overseas. Not in Jamaica, not too much there, you know. So a lot of those musicians, I've never seen them, their names on anything. Richard Ace. You know, he played on all these Toots and the Maytals. He played on Earl Bob Marley and all that. Never seen his name.
Mm-hmm.
And this is all still ska, before there was rocksteady or reggae.
No, well, you know, the same ska is called rocksteady. What okay. it is, what happened is that the pace, you know, I mean, it slowed down a little.
Mm-hmm.
When you have people like John Holt, you know, started in the Paragons.
Yeah.
All that ease of going, you know, on the beach.
Let's go and have some fun.
What amazes me about the journey of learning about Jamaican music is how much it mirrored what was going on in the States. So you talk about ska being New Orleans, jump blues, you know, shuffle blues, rhythm and blues. When that sound kind of shifted here in the States into more soul, vocal groups, that's what happened with rocksteady. You know, slow down. You had love songs, you know, which you kind of didn't really have as much in the ska era. And then if you think about what reggae, you know, morphed into from rocksteady, it's kind of that funk influence. You know, you got that even scratchier guitar. You know, you got that organ instead of the piano. You let the bassist go wild. You know, you got that one drop, you know, drumming style. You know, it's funk oriented.
No, the dancing was different also, you know, the ska, you know, crossing the arms and the legs and that type of stuff for the ska. Then when they call it rock steady, then you move to the side and move to the right, to the left. And then the reggae now is lifting your feet real fast because the reggae started very fast.
Mm-hmm.
Today now everything is called reggae. It's just the same ska.
It's been a complete pleasure to speak with harmonica player Charlie Organair, talking about those legendary Jamaica studio sessions during the first wave of ska. Charlie, thanks so much for being our guest on Sound Opinions.
Nice being with you guys.
When we come back, we'll continue our genre dissection in the UK and America as we look at the second and third waves of ska with DJ Chuck Wren. And later, we're going to review the debut album from Chicago poet and soul singer Jamila Woods. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.